Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, Pete Musto, Alice Bryant, and Dan Friedel. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Anti-government protesters clashed with security forces Wednesday in Caracas, Venezuela, as crisis conditions in the country worsen. One person was killed in the violence. Local politician Ramon Muchacho said 84 people were sent to the hospital. National Guard soldiers used tear gas and water cannons against the protesters, who were trying to march to the Supreme Court. Protesters there have reportedly thrown bottles filled with human waste at security forces. At least 39 people have died since protests started in April. On Wednesday, Miguel Castillo, a 27-year-old college graduate, was killed. Tensions intensified last week after President Nicolas Maduro sought to hold a special assembly to rewrite the country's constitution. Opposition leaders say he is trying to keep himself and his allies in power. The unrest appears to be affecting many parts of Venezuelan society, including health services. A recent report released by the health ministry says that the number of women who died in childbirth in 2016 reached 756. That is a 66% increase from the year before. Infant deaths have also increased sharply, and confirmed cases of malaria in the country increased 76% from the year before. The report was the first released by the health ministry since July 2015. It is not clear why the ministry restarted publishing its weekly report. President Maduro has blamed the health crisis on medicine hoarding. His government says some of the country's richest citizens are holding on to large amounts of medicine to create unrest. A leading group representing drug makers says there are shortages of 85% of medicines. Long waits have been reported at pharmacies. Because of the country's deep economic crisis, many doctors are leaving the country. Patients are having a hard time getting treatment. The Venezuelan economy was hit hard by the fall in oil prices more than 2 years ago. The Maduro government has been unable to ease high inflation, shortages of goods and services, and growing unrest. I'm Mario Ritter.
A new study has found that how long Americans live depends on where they live. Researchers at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, or IHME, at the University of Washington in Seattle, found that the gap between counties with the highest and lowest life expectancies is larger now than it was in 1980. And life expectancy is falling in some counties. The researchers say this shows there is a large and growing inequality in the health of Americans. Several counties in the states of North and South Dakota, where many Native Americans live, have the lowest life expectancy rate. In Oglala, Lakota County, South Dakota, the life expectancy was 66.8 in 2014. There has also been a drop in the life expectancy rate in counties in poor areas of Kentucky and West Virginia. In Owsley County, Kentucky, life expectancy was 72.4 years in 1980. But by 2014, it had fallen to 70.2. Some of the counties with the highest life expectancy are in the western state of Colorado. Summit County had the longest life expectancy at 86.8 years. It was 86.5 in Pitkin County and 85.9 in Eagle County. The average life expectancy in the United States was 79.1 in 2014. Dr. Ali Mukhtad is one of the authors of the study. He says the findings demonstrate an urgent need to reduce inequality in the health of Americans. He says federal, state, and local health departments need to invest in programs that work and engage their communities in disease prevention and health promotion. The study showed that spending more money on healthcare does not appear to increase life expectancy. The United States spends more per person on healthcare than many developed countries, $9,237 per person in 2014. That compares to $4,032 spent by Australia, which has a life expectancy of 82.3, and Japan, which spent $3,816 and has one of the highest life expectancies in the world at 83.1. Laura Dwyer Lindgren is a researcher at IHME and one of the authors of the study. She says examining life expectancy on a national level masks the massive differences that exist at the local level, especially in a country as diverse as the United States. Risk factors like obesity, lack of exercise, high blood pressure, and smoking explain a large portion of the variation in lifespans. Dr. Christopher Murray is the director of the IHME. He says the inequality in health in the United States, a country that spends more on healthcare than any other, is unacceptable. Every American, regardless of where they live or their background, deserves to live a long and healthy life. I'm Phil Dierking.
President Donald Trump and his administration have been reaching out to Southeast Asian countries in recent weeks. A new study suggests that trust between Southeast Asia and the United States is at a low point. The study is called "How Do Southeast Asians View the Trump Administration?" It was a project of the ASEAN Studies Center at the Isaias Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. Yusof Ishak was Singapore's first president. The online survey was completed last month. the center received answers from more than 300 people from throughout ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. They included government officials, civil society members, business leaders, educators, and media workers. About 43% of those questioned said the Trump administration was not interested in Southeast Asia. 37% said the opposite. About the same number of people said they expected U.S. dealings with Southeast Asia to decrease. They also said the United States was undependable as an ally compared to 4 months ago. The Trump administration has sought to ease such concerns. Last week, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson held meetings with ASEAN foreign ministers and top officials with the 10-member group. It was the first time a U.S. Secretary of State hosted such talks in Washington, D.C. The visitors took part in discussions on trade, North Korea, and the South China Sea. They even went to a baseball game.
The first 100 days of the Trump administration were marked by a lack of high-level U.S. contacts with Southeast Asia. The area enjoyed strong ties with the United States during the presidency of Barack Obama. With his invitation to the ASEAN officials, Tillerson wanted to improve ties. The secretary underscored that the region remains a very important partner for the United States, in fact, a strategic partner, said W. Patrick Murphy on May 4th. Murphy is the Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs. Before the gathering, Trump invited the leaders of Singapore, Thailand, and the Philippines to the White House. The U.S. leader is expected at two meetings in November, one with ASEAN leaders, the other with members of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Group, or APEC. But the survey found that only 10% of respondents think Trump will definitely attend the two meetings. Another 38% think his attendance is likely, while 32% said it is unlikely.
The ASEAN Studies Center noted the answers do not represent public opinion in Southeast Asia, which is home to 600 million people. The head of the center, Tang Siu Moon, said the Trump administration getting poor ratings in Southeast Asia was expected. But what surprised him was the intensity of the respondents' opinions. The survey shows an obvious lack of confidence in the U.S., and its dependability as an ally has also taken a beating, he wrote in an email. He added that the survey should not be seen as a rejection of the U.S. in Southeast Asia, but as a call for more involvement from Washington. It should come as no surprise that those questioned noted Chinese involvement in Southeast Asia. About 44% said Southeast Asia is more stable and secure with active U.S. engagement. But more than 51% said the United States has lost strategic ground to China since Trump became president. In addition, more than 73% said that China is the most influential country in Southeast Asia.
Most of the survey's answers came from Myanmar, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Yet all 10 countries in ASEAN were represented. One of the countries, Myanmar, and the United States strengthened ties during the Obama presidency. Foreign Minister and State Counselor Aung San Suu Kyi did not attend the meeting last week in Washington. She instead sent her national security advisor with a letter for Tillerson. Both governments said her inability to attend was just a result of conflicting schedules. She was in Europe last week. But observers say her absence was evidence of the different treatment Myanmar received under Obama. He visited the country twice and invited Aung San Suu Kyi to the White House. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Chloe Gray watches a computer screen most of the day, sitting in her pink bedroom, surrounded by stuffed animals, books, and photos on the wall. The 11-year-old is not able to go to school. She is at home in the U.S. state of Maryland, recovering from surgery. The computer is there to control a robot that goes to school in her place. The robot comes from a company called Double Robotics. It is officially called a telepresence robot, but her friends at school like to call it the Clobot. The robot is an iPad tablet connected to a long pole on a set of wheels. Chloe can control the robot using her home computer. The tablet has a camera with a special lens that allows Chloe to see most of the classroom. She can speak to the teacher and her classmates using a microphone. A speaker allows them to hear her. If she wants to answer a question, she presses a button that makes the robot taller. That allows her teacher, Mary Fucella, to see her. It's just like having the normal Chloe in the classroom, Fucella said. Chloe likes it so much better than having a special teacher, called a tutor, come to her home for one-on-one instruction. It allows Chloe to interact with her friends and teachers. It is almost like going to school. Chloe's school district has 6 of the robots, and each costs about $3,000. Chloe's robot was donated by a local charity. Patrick Malone works in the school district's technology office. He said the 6 robots make a big difference for kids who cannot come to school. Every kid that uses this technology starts to smile again, he said. They start to feel like a regular kid again, and I cannot put a price on that. David Kahn is the head of Double Robotics. He knows these robots are important for students who are sick and cannot regularly go to school. he is happy his company can provide a way for all students to attend school, no matter their situation. There are about 300 double robotics robots in schools in the U.S. Schools in China, Japan, Australia, and Canada are also using them. While they seem to be a success, the robots do take some getting used to. Kyla Jones is Chloe's friend. They walk to lunch together in the school's cafeteria. At first, it was kind of weird, Jones said, of walking around with a robot. But now, the girls act as if nothing has changed. They have their normal conversations, and Chloe has lunch at home while her friends have lunch at school. It can be hard for the Clobot to move in a crowded lunchroom, but once Clobot is at her favorite table with her friends, it is almost as good as being there in person. Chloe said, however, she will be happy when she is able to go back to school, and she will not miss the Clobot at all. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. There Will Be Blood is a film about Daniel Plainview, an American oil man in the early part of the 20th century. The film's story is dark. Plainview builds his oil business slowly by using cruel, sometimes painful actions. The world he lives in is not a happy one. A famous line from the 2007 movie sounds like this.
I have two others drilling and I have 16 producing at Antelope, so... Ladies and gentlemen, if I say I'm an oil man, you will agree. Now, you have a great chance here. But bear in mind, you can lose it all if you're not careful.
This week, our everyday grammar story is not about building an oil business. Instead, our report deals with verbs. The verb have appeared several times in the audio you heard. You might have noticed that it had two somewhat different meanings. Today, we will discover how the verb have often goes with specific nouns or noun phrases to express an idiomatic meaning.
Have is very common in both speaking and writing. It is common because it has many meanings and uses. The verb have is irregular. In other words, the past tense is not formed by adding the usual ed ending. Today, we look at how to use have when it is the main verb in the sentence. One common structure is have plus a noun phrase. For example, you might hear a person say, "I have a bicycle," or "I don't have a bicycle." In these sentences, the verb have means to own or possess something. This use of have is somewhat rare in everyday speech, say Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber, two experts on English grammar. In everyday speech, several nouns often appear after the verb have. Together, these structures express idiomatic meanings. In other words, the meaning of the group of words is different from the individual words. Today, we will consider two common idiomatic meanings of the have plus noun phrase structure. These structures are very common in films and popular music.
The verb have often appears before noun phrases, such as an idea, no idea, or a question. When the verb have appears with these noun phrases, the structure takes on an idiomatic meaning, to be thinking about something. Consider this example from the 1971 film Clute.
I have no idea what's going to happen. I can't stay in the city, you know? Maybe I'll come back. You'll probably see me next week.
You will notice that the speaker says, "I have no idea." The speaker means that she is actively thinking about something and is unable to provide an answer at this time. How is this statement different than saying something like, "I don't know"? Saying, "I have no idea," is more forceful than saying, "I don't know." They have the same general meaning, but they have a small difference in terms of style.
A less common noun that often comes with the verb have is the word plan. In the horror film The Silence of the Lambs, actor Anthony Hopkins, as Dr. Hannibal Lecter, gives you an example of this structure.
Where are you, Dr. Lecter?
I have no plans to call on you, Clarice. The world's more interesting with you in it.
When Lecter says he has no plans to call on Clarice, what he actually means is that he is not thinking about killing her. So, why did he say, "I have no plans," instead of, "I'm not thinking about"? One possible explanation is this. Hannibal Lecter is a movie character who is always planning. His statement could mean that his plans might change in the future. Whatever the case, he likes to leave his statements unclear.
The verb have often goes with other noun phrases, such as chance or time. When have goes with these noun phrases, it means to get an opportunity or to get time to do something. So, for example, many American students have said, "I didn't have time to do my science homework," or "I didn't have a chance to read the book." You heard another example of this structure at the beginning of this program.
Now, you have a great chance here, but bear in mind you can lose it all if you're not careful.
Daniel Plainview is trying to persuade people to help him build oil wells. So he uses the words, "You have a great chance here." He wants people to think of how they will profit from working with him or giving him money.
The main idea of this report was to explain common have plus noun phrase expressions. The next time you are watching an American film or listening to American music, try to find examples of have plus a noun phrase. Do the speakers use it in its traditional sense, to own or possess something? Or do they use it in a different, idiomatic way? Once you have learned the meaning of the phrase, ask yourself why the speaker may have said what they did. Did the speaker say it for a stylistic reason? The answers to these questions may not be easy. However, asking them can help you begin to understand how culture, style, and grammar work together. That is all for today. Now, you have a chance to go learn other meanings of the verb have. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.